So, my friends, I just felt like we haven't done a witch church in a while. I told y'all I was, I think a couple weeks ago, I said this was the last witch church of 2023. And I was gonna wait maybe to this upcoming Sunday, which I think is the 6th or the 7th. But I was like, you know what? No, like, let's talk, let's chat, and let's meet on the first day of 2024. And talk a little bit about the energies of this year ahead and just kind of, yeah, celebrate a little bit with each other. And I will say, previously, I kind of felt like I was saying, I'm kind of like a New Year's Eve hater just because it forces me to stay up late. But previously, I do feel like, especially the past like 4 or 5 years, I haven't, it's not that I haven't like really taken like New Year's Day a la Gregorian calendar seriously, but it's been a little bit of like an eye roll for me because it's been like, okay, yeah, like, you know, the calendar was invented by the patriarchy, and like there really is no meaning to January 1st. And if we look at it from more of a pagan perspective, we're sort of in the middle of winter and we're between Samhain and you know, the first holiday of the pagan spring. So, you know, there's something there too where, like, you know, is it truly wise to like plant seeds, start goals when it's like the dead of winter or whatever, right? And in past years, I've totally felt like that, like a sort of like, eh, like, is this really the right time? Or, you know, haven't felt very motivated by this idea of January 1st, especially when we think about how, like, how capitalism uses January 1st as yet another like marketing scheme, and even like this sort of like roots of things like fat phobia, or I don't know, like it's just there's such it's such a heavily loaded day that often doesn't completely sit right with me, and at the same time And at the same time, I feel slightly different this year. I think it might be because, you know, there's so many like just horrendous things we've sat through in the past couple years, and especially the past couple months. You know, there's something here about taking any opportunity we can to be optimistic. Taking any opportunity we can to find like hope or faith. And I really sit and I think a lot about like how have humans survived this long? And we haven't, I don't think we've survived just because we figured out like how to find food and how to feed ourselves and drink clean water or like whatever. I think part of the reason we've survived this long is because of our connection to hope, to faith. It's like the storytellers and the poets and, you know, whatever that quote is from Dead Poets Society that Robin Williams says, like, you know, those are the people that have kept us alive, right? And I'm thinking about how this year a message that has been coming through is take any opportunity to find faith and to find hope. And it's especially important in such a like a world where we're sitting in so much extremism and so much grief, and remembering that the faith and the hope can also exist with it. I think this goes along with just the sense that 2024, at least other astrologers might say differently, but I do feel like Jupiter is kind of the star of the show in 2024. And who is Jupiter? Well, Jupiter, we know, the king of the gods, the planet of expansion and growth. And, you know, there's a certain zoomed out perspective that Jupiter can have when it comes to the almost the long-term perspective of our goals. It's not only Saturn who rules over the long-term. Saturn ultimately builds the foundation for our long-term goals, but Jupiter gives us the faith and the courage and the risk-taking, the risk-taking juice in order to continue to build that long-term foundation that Saturn often, like, probes us to build. This year, you know, looking at why I'm thinking Jupiter is one of the more important planets, we have a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction this spring in Taurus. It's going to be likely the biggest transit of 2024. That'll happen near the end of April. You know, there's a sense of Jupiter, planet of expansion, and Uranus, the planet of change and revolution, coming together in Taurus, specifically as individuals. Our Taurus house is going through a revolution of sorts, okay? So that's going to be an important moment for Jupiter. And I'm almost wondering, maybe this is why I'm getting the message now, that it's, you know, important to, as cheesy as it sounds, like, keep the faith. If there is any ounce of optimism or even a frequency of excitement you can be in today, or, you know, as you are envisioning what this next year looks like for you, that's good, because you know what? You know, in under 4 months, Jupiter will be in that conjunction with Uranus. Between now and end of April, Jupiter is approaching that conjunction with Uranus. Jupiter just stationed direct. Like, that's not a coincidence that it's the first of the year and Jupiter stations direct. You know, Jupiter is leading us towards some revolutionary change, not only in our own lives, but I, you know, hope in a lot of ways, this continues to be reflected societally, politically. Jess, you said Jupiter was also the god of justice and universal law. It feels really hopeful to know that maybe the world will see justice when we've seen so much injustice lately. Yes, yeah, that's such a good point. And I think there's, yeah, like, you know, just kind of looking at that conjunction being such a big part of this year ahead. Think when it comes to justice and injustice, and universal law, can humans in our own conceptualization of universal law completely get it? Probably not. But I think we have a bit of a grasp on the way the universe distributes energy back to us, and the way the universe doesn't forget injustice. You know, some may call it karma, you know, not that I really love the whole, like, karma's a bitch kind of mentality, but there's something too. I like that, just like that kind of idea that the universal force is inherently filled with justice. And it's like the human ego and the human conceptualization of good and bad that creates injustice. And the universe will balance that injustice in some way, shape, or form, whether we're able to see it in our like human perspective or not. That might be a big part of 2024 in a lot of ways. Especially because after the conjunction at the end of April, Jupiter will travel over to Gemini by the end of May. And once Jupiter gets into Gemini, Jupiter will enter a square with Saturn for the rest of its time in Gemini, which will be roughly from end of May 2024 until about June 2025. So Jupiter will be in a sign-based square with Saturn in Pisces. What does that mean in English? Some of you actually, if anybody's around my age, like born in 1995, if you have Saturn in Pisces, and Jupiter in Sagittarius, you have a Saturn-Jupiter square in your natal chart. You were born under a Jupiter-Saturn square signature. And now, you know, we're kind of hitting that Jupiter opposition where Jupiter is going to be in Gemini and forming the square with Saturn in Pisces from a different angle, right? And when Jupiter and Saturn get together in this square, I think that's why I'm getting this message of upholding the faith and upholding the belief in goodness or in inspiration or the belief that, you know, the belief that things can change, I think, is really important under a Jupiter-Saturn square. It's almost like the planet of optimism and risk-taking and connection with spirit kind of gets in this tension-filled relationship with Saturn, which is our foundations and the way we build the future. So there's a little bit of like a huge change coming in the spring. And then as Jupiter enters the square with Saturn for the rest of the year, it's a bit of like, how do I reckon with this change? And what new belief systems or what new mantras of faith and courage and risk are required from this change? I also think too, I was thinking about Jupiter and the book, one of my favorite books, The Miracle Club by Mitch Horowitz. I've recommended Mitch Horowitz on the podcast before. I really think that he writes about manifestation in a very clear way that's not like a whitewashing, positive, toxic positivity kind of way. I think he really gets into like the science and the brain, almost like the brain chemicals behind manifesting different things or working towards our goals or having a vision not only for ourselves but for society. And one of my favorite things that he says is, I'm trying to think, like there's a sentence that I love, and he says, belief is the fee of actualization. Belief is the fee of actualization. Meaning that in order for something to materialize, we have to believe that it could happen. Like, that vision has to be in place somewhere first in order for it to come about, right? And it kind of makes sense. Like, on a very rudimentary level, belief is the fee of actualization. Let's say we're an architect and we're building a house. The belief that, or like the vision of the house or the plan or the blueprint, you have to believe it's possible to get the supplies to and the materials to build this house in order for it to actually materialize, right? So anything that we are seeing literally in front of our eyes, like I'm looking at my, you know, these material objects, like literally like this book or my iPad or like whatever, my laptop, my bed, all of these material things in front of us started with the belief that this material thing could be true and could come into form, right? So this sort of belief is the fee of actualization. If you want something to come into form, the foundational belief has to be there. And that can be tricky because I think a lot of times our childhood wounds sometimes add up to like a lack of capability or a disbelief in things really being possible for us. So I think this is where it leads to like these sort of dreams or these visions that we might have for ourselves. And we think like, oh, that could never happen. Or that could never change in my favor. Or that's just sort of a pipe dream, right? But in that sense, we're not paying the fee of actualization, right? like belief is an important part of our goals and our manifestations in general, right? So I think that's also why in such a Jupiter-focused year, I'm getting this sense of like beginning the year not even like in an optimistic way if you're not feeling that, but beginning the year with repairing relationship with belief. Yeah, repairing relationship with belief. That feels really important. And Jess, you said belief is the fee of actualization is in line with what you told me about my chart reading about Jupiter and Sag, in the sense that I'll be successful in my career because I just trust that it will happen. Yeah. And that's why Jupiterian people tend to be seen as like lucky. Are they actually more lucky than the average person, or are they just more willing to believe that the thing can happen, right? And I'll give an example of this, like this sort of dissonance between what we want and what we believe to be possible for us. And sometimes there's sort of like space in between that, right? Like, I remember my first job was working at my local library. And I've been unpacking this a lot this time in my life because I just finished just this incredible semester with co-teaching with Sarah Cook and we were co-teaching the Untethered Artist class, and it was like one of those like beautiful, really life-changing classes where it was a class where we were examining relationship to creativity, which sounds kind of basic when I say it like that, but at the same time, I can't even put words to the magic of what happened in that class for all of us. And, you know, I was examining a lot of my relationship to creativity. Where did it start? I remember as like a teenager, or even like a early, like a tween, like around 12, 13, I started saying, I want to be an author. That's one of the first like real dream jobs that I felt aligned with. Like I said, I really want to write a book. I want to be an author. And I would be working at the library as a teenager, like 2 days a week after high school or whatever. And I would be literally staring at hundreds of books for like 6 hours, and I would put away the books. Like, that was my job. And I would truly, like, I would wonder, like, could this be me? Like, could I materialize, like, a book, you know? And, like, what's the difference between me and the thousands of people in the library? Well, not the people, but the books, you know, representing the thousands of people that have believed they could actualize a book, right? And I really do think I had, like, there's some deep part of me that, you know, has trouble believing that I could actualize a book, you know, until honestly kind of recently. Like, I think the relationship with the creativity stuff has really changed for me, where now, after so long, I mean, I'm 28, so this was happening when I was like 13, so I can't really do the math, 15 years ago, you know, this has been going on for 15 years, a sort of battle with like my capability as a writer, right? And this is coming from someone who like was literally a creative writing major in college, you know. like out of everybody, I should have believed that I could materialize that dream, but it just didn't click really until recently. And I think the Untethered Artist really helped. And specifically, on our last day of class on Saturday, the 30th, we did a showcase, which was so fun. And, you know, me and Sarah and the other classmates went around and we just shared things that we've been creating. So, you know, someone shared a recipe that they created, and, you know, I read poems, and someone else also read their poems, and, you know, someone shared like sort of a reflection about herbalism, and another person shared how they, you know, in focusing more on their journaling, they've shared more at work and spoken up more at work, and like all this like really cool stuff. And specifically, I had this moment after I read my poems, just being in like a safe place where you received positive feedback. I realized that sometimes we discount that we truly need positive feedback from others in order to feed our belief, right? Like, and this goes back to, yeah, belief is the fee of actualization. We need to believe that something could actualize, but how do we genuinely believe things could happen for us? Comes from a place of self-esteem, right? And it comes from a place of almost like a self-outlook or self-understanding. And in order to have good self-understanding, you know, this then turns into like a back to inner child work, which I love to make that that sharp turn. Like, you know, in order for a kid to have positive self-esteem, they need to receive positive reinforcement from their parents, right? A lot of our parents weren't good at that because their parents weren't good at that, you know? Like, and it makes sense. Like, I don't blame my parents or my grandparents for whatever, like, not being very good at positive reinforcement. You know, like, there's something about being told when you're young, like, you're capable and you're smart and just really you're good. You're inherently good. That's, like, the juice that gets us to a point of belief in our own selves, and then that leads to belief is the fee of actualization, right? And I'm wondering too, if you're having trouble with this sort of belief is the fee of actualization, how can we give ourselves that positive reinforcement? In my case, I actually needed to hear it from the outside world, but not in a way of like, oh my God, I need others' validation. It's almost like I needed to receive that positive validation in a safe place from people that I really love and know and respect. Didn't come from my parents, you know, didn't come from like a teacher or like, you know, whatever. It's some like ego place. It really came from a place of love. And I don't think we should, this year, we shouldn't hesitate to share what we're looking, share our sort of vision and ask for that positive reinforcement. Again, it's not the same as like searching for validation from others. It's almost like, where can we find this positive reinforcement in the safe places from the people we know love us and see us already, regardless of what we produce or make, you know? And having that add to the magic of what we're creating, I think that could be really important for the Jupiter year as well. And, you know, there's something too that I was thinking of, because me and my Chicago tarot class, we were pulling our year ahead cards, and I always like to use the Wild Unknown archetype deck as like a good oracle card for 2024, or just for the year ahead. And I have an individual archetype, but I think the collective archetype that I've been kind of tapping into is the Starborn in this card. And it kind of looks like my sweatshirt. It's funny. And Katie, you said safe space to get the fuel, I think of turning red when she turns inward and imagines herself being held by her friends and is able to decompress. I love that. Is Turning Red a movie or a book, Katie? I'll have to put it on my list regardless. But yeah, I mean, and that makes me think too, like sometimes receiving validation or not receiving, like, receiving encouragement, maybe that's the word. Receiving encouragement is different than validation, than seeking validation. Because I even think just by connecting with our higher selves and our guides and our ancestors, I think there's an endless amount of juice that they have for us where, like, if you want to know someone, an energy who unconditionally believes in us. I mean, it's the guides and the ancestors and our highest good, you know? Like, we all have a lot of unconditional love and unconditional belief. Whether we see it or not on the earthly plane, or whether or not we can receive it on the earthly plane, it's always coming from the other side, for sure. And Katie, you said, okay, so Turning Red, it's a Disney movie about the girl who turns into an adorable red panda. Oh, or a Pixar movie. Yes, okay, cool. I'm going to have to check it out. That sounds good. Going back to this archetype, the Starborn, I just want to read what Kim Kranz says about this archetype, because I think it's important with our discussion today. So Kim Kranz says the Starborn is the divine child, the star child, the destined. And she says, an elusive yet radiant aspect of the self, the Starborn archetype points to the cosmic spark of light that arrives with each being at birth. The moment the newborn crowns, whether vaginally or surgically, the royal stars above are said to constellate in a unique shape that maps our path into this world. The idea of destiny is controversial, yet the Starborn naturally feels a sense of destination and purpose, aiming itself towards a future that is beyond the mundane. When this card appears, travel back to your birth story for clues and insights. What did you desire when you were young? Practice seeing your life from a mythic point of view rather than as a series of logistics. Read the story of the three fates and envision yourself born under the stars with a unique destiny. And it says, when in the light, this archetype is light, trusting, vibrant, and aimed. When in the dark, there's a feeling of misalignment or a loss of longing. When this card appears, don't be surprised if you receive a surge of desire for a long-lost dream, one you haven't visited since childhood. Let this desire shake you up. Why is that like our archetype of 2024 with all of these Jupiter transits? I'm listening, hang on. I think the Starborn archetype, and this is what I believe about astrology too, and I'm really lucky to be able to like have this put in my face so often, because like just from reading for my clients or reading for myself, or like I get to stare at a chart all day, you know, I get to stare at the birth chart all day, which is a gift, because I think I have a constant reminder that at least I don't think life is an accident, you know, or like I don't think any of our placements in our natal charts are by coincidence. In fact, I think everything that is in our chart was chosen by us and by the universe. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, you are a Leo sun or a Taurus moon or a Pisces rising or like whatever it is. Like, I really deeply trust that we chose on some soul subconscious level to be here in the frequency of who we are, you know? And I think we, our souls waited to come to this moment, you know, to be who we are. And as much as I hate sometimes being, you know, part of this age of, like, such mass destruction and this, like, technological blah, 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 or, like, you know, I also don't necessarily hate it, or I don't doubt that I chose to incarnate at this time, you know? So I think that's part of the Starborn's inherent belief in their own destiny. It's kind of like, oh, I'm here, and I chose to be here, and I chose my placements, my astrology placements, for a reason, you know? And those astrology, you know, placements are important for my story and my path and my beliefs, right? And, oh, Ashley, you're here. Good. I was hoping you were here, because I remember that you pulled the Starborn in the year ahead. Someone else, another client I pulled this for, so it's, like, coming out in a lot of these year ahead readings I've been doing. And I got this message that the Starborn is like a high frequency of the same archetype that the Black Sheep comes from, because the Black Sheep archetype is more like akin to like a starving artist or like a struggling creative, like this sort of attitude or this belief that like, I'm so different, and and I'm not capable, or this world isn't made for me, or, you know, like all of the things that the Black Sheep starving artist archetype might play on repeat. Believe me, I know it well. You know, like I know this archetype well. I think a lot of highly sensitive people know this archetype well. A lot of people who exist on the neurodiversity spectrum know this archetype well, you know, like, because it's partially, I mean, it is kind of true that the world is not made for us. And at the same time, our higher frequency is the Starborn. Like, we get to recognize deeper things about the universe than the average quote-unquote person would, and I think it'd be boring to not be the Starborn, you know, like I think it'd be boring to never feel like the Black Sheep in this lifetime, you know, because like that's what ultimately makes us interesting, you know, and makes our goals interesting and what we're looking for. You know, it makes even how we end up being of service interesting. So yeah, I think there's some good juice with the Starborn this year, and I'm excited with all these Jupiter transits. And, I think, yes, even though like New Year's Day, January 1st, setting all these goals and blah, 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 could kind of leave a bad taste in our mouth, I would encourage us as a community to at least contemplate like the beliefs that we're going into 2024 with. Again, I'll say it one more time, that Mitch Horowitz, like, belief is the fee of actualization. And the beliefs that we hold about ourselves can be so powerful in both a life-changingly positive way, and also the beliefs that we hold can be such a stagnant force that's rooted in ego, because it's not just egoic to be like this cocky, like, oh my god, I could do anything, you know, I'm the best, I'm the hottest person in the room. Like, we often think of ego like that, But guess what? What is equally egoic is sort of saying to ourselves, I could never do that. You know, that's also egoic. We're buying into an ego story that we're not capable. Or like, I could never be confident enough. Or I could never be good enough. Or I'm not talented enough. That's an ego story too. You know? So, you know, examine those beliefs before, you know, you don't have to set all these goals or expectations, but yeah, examining those beliefs is very important, I think, especially in this first week as Jupiter goes direct. One more snippet, one more message I'm going to share is idea that, like, sometimes around this time of year, we feel pressure to set a yearly goal. Like, this year, I am going to whatever. Get a promotion, whatever it is. Lose 50 pounds and get a promotion. You know, the most capitalistic goal. So we have a tendency. Oh my God, guys, I see a spider as I'm talking about this. It's a sign. I'll take them outside in a second. You know, there's something this year where, I was getting daily, weekly, and monthly goals are much more important than the yearly goal. And if you're struggling with what to, I don't know, focus on this year, just forget it. Like, don't even look at, like, the grand scheme of things. It might even confuse us in some way or make us more scattered. And it is enough to have these shorter goals. Like, literally, like, today I'm going to get up and I'm going to do witch church. Like, the daily and the weekly goals and the monthly goals, if like you want to envision it like that, but really like the day-to-day stuff is much more important for some reason than this big yearly vision this year. I was just getting that message. So think about that. And I definitely want to get back into bullet journaling this year. If you guys don't follow Elizabeth Rizzo on Instagram, she is a tarot teacher of mine. She's like the bullet journal guru, so follow her. I am not typically into bullet journaling, but one of my students too in the Untethered Artist class, shout out to Violet, she showed us her bullet journal on the last day of class, and it was so beautiful. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, like, you're right. Like, let's just create something beautiful just for us. You know, like, no one's going to see this, but just because no one's going to see it but me doesn't mean I can't make it beautiful. Oh, hey, Nick. Happy New Year. I'm so glad to see ya. So I was just thinking about you. I was in Milwaukee like a week and a half ago. So my friends, let's do this. I feel called to still, I'm going to pull a card for like everybody. Like, we'll do a collective pull. And we just talked about how the Starborn is sort of our archetype as a collective for this year. I'm going to pull three cards and, they'll kind of be like the sub archetype that applies to you, you know, this year. And I'm thinking about, three different symbols. One symbol is the pebble. The other symbol is the yellow daisy, and the other symbol is the spider. So you just tune into which one of those symbols feels the best for you. The pebble, the yellow daisy, or the spider. Okay. All right, so if you chose the pebble, your archetype is Gnosis. So this is the way I explain this archetype. So it's a little bit of like a heavier one, but if someone says they're agnostic, right? Like you're like, what religion are you? And they're like, I'm agnostic. They're saying like, I don't know what I believe. Like I'm not an atheist, but I'm not a Christian. Like I just kind of choose to not know, right? So, you know, the opposite of agnostic is Gnostic or Gnosis, which is sort of a state where, like, almost like we do know or we do center our truth, or there's a sense of like sort of spiritual divine knowing that is inside of us, right? And I'm tempted to just, I want to look at what, Kim Cran says, innermost knowing, mystic truths, true knowledge is not found in facts and figures, but rather Gnosis points the deep and timeless archetypal wisdom that rises from the felt experience. So it feels to me like if you chose the pebble and you got Gnosis, I actually think that your spiritual studies are important this year. Like, maybe some of you are going to dive deeper into studying tarot or astrology, or mysticism in some way. Maybe someone is going to go to yoga teacher training or whatever. Like, there's something about the focus on your spiritual studies that is important. It's important to become a student this year. I am going to, shameless plug, this is not rigged, but I will do another tarot class this year. And I also am going to launch my astrology school this year. So keep an eye out for that. I'm hoping to start my astrology school in March. So if you are wanting to learn astrology from me, and it'll be a longer journey. It'll be like a 9-month container. So it's almost like a commitment for like the year to study. So, you know, yeah, even if it's not astrology, like there's just something that the Gnosis people are diving deeper into learning. Okay. If you pulled the yellow daisy, you got the orphan. Oh, funny. There's a little flower there. Okay. I want to read what Kim Cran says for a second. Okay, so the orphan is the wounded child, the abandoned, the beggar. To study the orphan is to study the deep and challenging energy of our time. We are ever more connected, yet face collective isolation. The refugee crisis haunts our planet. Children are separated from their parents. The earth begs for our attention. We are in time of a universal orphanage, of nature, of each other, of our own hearts. Take refuge in the fact that we all share this core wound and dilemma. It is normal to fear this card. When it appears, take time to be present of the feelings this card stirs up. What is the deepest gift you could imagine giving to others? What has been rejected is quite possibly what is needed. So I'm getting, for those of you who pulled or who chose the yellow daisy and got the orphan, this year there's some inner child healing that has to do with rejection and abandonment that you're facing and potentially bringing medicine to. And sometimes, you know, it almost is giving me kind of like a Chiron message too. Like Chiron is the wounded healer, and he is wounded, and the only way he can heal and live a fulfilling life is to help others heal. So sometimes when we feel stuck in our own wounding and healing process, it does help to be of service to others, and take ourselves out of the victim sort of frequency, and instead enter a frequency of like being of service and seeing also what other people can reflect to us about our inner child. And I think there's like a gift here for those of you who chose the orphan that is about, it's about self-parenting and not letting the wounds of rejection or abandonment be the conductor of the movement of your life. Because oftentimes, because those wounds are so painful and deep-seated, that is what happens, and we don't even realize it. So I think it's powerful when we don't let those things drive the car so much. Okay. And lastly, the spider. If you pick the spider, you got the creator. This makes me smile. I picked the spider. So the creator, in a biased way, definitely going to be writing a lot more this year than I have been in the past, like, literally 5 or 6 years. So I'm excited to see that reflected. And it's possible if you pick the spider, maybe you do also have a creative project on your mind. Maybe there's a book or a piece of art or a podcast or whatever. So this is interesting. This archetype annihilates preconceived notions of what is possible, leaving unexpected openings in the wake of its destruction. The creator does this by first being absolutely present to what is, and second, trusting that a force greater than themselves awaits constant collaboration with each human soul. Whether we call it nature, God, goddess, Shakti, or divinity, it remains nameless. It is the creator's lifelong companion. Okay, yeah. So this is sort of like connecting with that energy, that life force that sort of allows us to bring our creations into the world. And I also think too, like in the card itself, I see this hand. So it's like our hand is creating whatever piece of art that we are, but yet surrounding it are sort of the cosmic colors of the universe. So feels to me like the universe is very much partnering with us on this creation. And that's sort of what books like The Artist's Way, or my new favorite book on creation is the If You Want to Write by Brenda Uhland. Sarah Cook introduced that book to me. That was one of the books we read in the Untethered Artist class. You know, something Brenda Uhland and Julia Cameron talk about is just the belief that we harness the divine energy of the universe inside of us. And when we create, we're almost doing a favor to God, or we're showing gratitude to the universe for like being alive. And talk about beliefs. You know, this is the belief that you are meant to create in this lifetime, and that everybody is an artist, even if it's not in this traditional, I'm a painter or I'm a musician type of way. Like, everybody is an artist. And if you don't believe you're an artist, I would invite you to challenge that this year. Okay. All right, friends. So much love to you. January 13th, which is a Saturday, if you are in the Chicagoland area, please join me for a in-person workshop about the year ahead. It's a year ahead astrology workshop. I'll be holding it at Five Point Holistic Health, which is in Logan Square. It'll be a really fun afternoon of astrology stuff. We'll be talking about the major transits of 2024 and how they apply to your chart. If you would like to book your own personalized reading, go to my website, MalloryHasty.com. You'll see in the Book a Session tab, if you click Book a Session, you'll be led to this thing, this drop-down menu, and it'll say 2024 Year Ahead Readings. And there's quite a few options in there, whether you want astrology or tarot or a little bit mixing of both. It's a good time to get an astrology and a tarot check-in. So would love to work with you and hold space for you and your goals and everything that's coming in 2024. Thank you guys. You guys are the best. And so glad I popped on this morning, and I'll see you all next week. Okay, talk soon.